from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Travis DiNicola. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Wallrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Sharon Gamble. Today I'll get a preview of the River Roots Fest in Madison.
I'll find out about a new film series which shines a light on mental health awareness.
And I'll find out about Footlight Theater's production of Follies. And we'll have our arts calendar of events we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. We start today with a road trip to the Madison River Roots Festival. Sharon Gamble invited Greg Ziesmer to tell us about the lineup and attractions at this May 17th and 18th celebration of music, fun, and food.
Okay, remind us of how this festival started.
Well, it started as the vision of two gentlemen, Jeff Garrett and John Walburn, from Madison. There was already an existing festival called Riverfest, which is blues and barbecue. It's our big blues and barbecue festival in August. And they wanted to create another festival that was more family-oriented and focused on folk music, basically, was how the original inception, the original idea was. So it started 7 years ago in 2006. Was the first year, and we had Todd Snyder was our headliner, and Roger McGuinn from the Byrds, and it was very much more of a folk-oriented festival. And Greg, it was very small, you know, and it took place in the same venue where we do it now, but the venue's been completely rebuilt into a terraced grass lawn amphitheater.
And that's right on the river.
Yeah, Bicentennial Park, right on the river. It's a city block. It's a beautiful view of the Kentucky Hills across and the Ohio River and our new bridge that we're getting in Madison.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But it was just a small little gathering to start with, but through promotion and hard efforts and a lot of volunteer work, it's been growing over the years, and now it's really blossomed into what, well, we've actually changed the definition of it a little bit, too, by changing the name. It used to be called Ohio River Valley Folk Festival, which is a long name. It's an even longer domain name.
And not a very memorable acronym, even.
No,
you can't pronounce it very well.
So we thought about the other festival being called Riverfest and how that's one word. It's succinct. Mm-hmm. And we thought, well, what can we name our festival? And we wanted to change it from folk music, too, as the focus, because it's not your granddaddy's folk music.
You know,
it's roots music is what we really are about.
But pause for a second, because I want you to define that. We have this conversation occasionally with Dan Henkel, who is the impresario behind Indie Folk Series.
Yeah, Dan's a friend of mine.
Yeah, I figured. But what is your definition of roots music?
Roots music, I think, is I think it's music that derives itself from the roots of American music, whether the influences that make up what is American music. And those influences are all are from a variety of walks of life.
Sure.
From, you know, the African American culture, which brought the banjo to the United States. You know, the African culture brought the banjo to the United States. It's been incorporated with Appalachian music, which was a derivative of Irish and Scottish music when they settled here. So I think it really, roots music is a contemporary version of or a contemporary derivative of those music forms.
That music originated. That draws on our shared heritage
exactly.
But also our individual heritage.
Right,
yeah.
And our collective heritage. And I think that's a broad demographic. America is a melting pot, and that melting pot is what has created this unique form and style of music. And in contemporary roots music, we have a lot of rediscovery of that, of those older styles of music, and being recrafted, regenerated, and recreated by young people that are very energized about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what I'm finding most fascinating about the roots music culture now. It's got really young blood, and it's really exciting.
We were talking a little bit before we turned on the microphone about how the banjo is so hot right now, so hip and so hot. Steve Martin, I heard a track this weekend with Steve Martin on a new album. And you know, it's just turning up everywhere alongside guitars, alongside electric and acoustic guitars.
Absolutely.
And mandolins. And it's just so cool that I think changing the name of the festival was really smart because folk has a connotation for a certain generation mm-hmm. of people that kind of puts it off in the corner and says, oh, it's only this, yeah. whereas roots is broader.
I actually had people say, I don't like folk music. I don't go to that festival.
Aww.
So now it's called
Shame
River Roots because yeah. we're on the Ohio River and we're playing roots music and we're attracting a much younger and broader demographic. It's not that we just want to bring young people. We want to bring a broad demographic
yeah, sure.
of people. This music speaks to people of all ages, and that's really wonderful.
So it's funny, we say family friendly and people automatically picture kids, but it strikes me it could go the other direction and be safe to bring your grandparents to this.
Absolutely. Thing.
They're not going to hear something
no.
that offends
no.
them.
Yeah. No, 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 absolutely not. And speaking of the banjo, I guess speaking of offending things, we're going to have to find another instrument to poke fun at now because it's become hip. No more banjo jokes.
But, darn it.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, this is kids of all ages. Absolutely. This festival is about just reaching out to people of a broad spectrum, both age and demographic and musical taste.
Mm-hmm.
So we've really engineered it this year and raised the level quite a bit as far as that type of thing, in that we have the Folk Art Village that we have, and that demonstrates period and historic arts and crafts demonstrated by people in period dress.
Mm-hmm.
So you have muzzle loader makers and violin makers and loom weavers. And then we also have modern art demonstrators that are doing like glass blowing and things like that. And they're performing it on site. So you can actually watch these crafts being made and you can talk to the artist. And then we also have a children's craft tent where kids can go and we supply the art supplies and they can get in there and get their hands dirty and paint a t-shirt for themselves or make a painting on an easel. And, you know, really immerse themselves in the festival. We even have this year, we're bringing a Frisbee dog act, you know, like the ones that perform at the halftime shows,
sure.
right? So we've got six border collies that are coming in from Kentucky, and they're going to do a couple of Frisbee dog shows, like 2.5-hour shows on Saturday.
How fun.
For the kids, too. So we're mixing it up. We're giving people a lot of things to choose from. And we've changed the festival from a 3-day festival, which was Friday night over to Sunday.
Right.
Sunday really wasn't working out for us. We weren't getting really very good attendance, and it wasn't paying for itself.
Sure.
So we've decided to go back to a Friday and Saturday show. But we've added a second stage on Saturday. So we have two alternating stages, one main stage and then a second stage, which is singers and songwriters
mm-hmm.
primarily.
How far apart are they?
They're far enough apart that they won't bleed over with each
good,
other.
Good, good.
Yeah, and the sound systems are pointing in opposite directions.
Ah, smart.
And so the second stage will have will be tented, so you'll be able to go over there. It'll already have seats and chairs there, so you won't have to move your camp chair and lose your spot at the main stage. You can just meander over there and you'll go listen to Stacey Earle and Mark Stewart or Danny Flanagan or... let's see who else we're going to have there. Danny Schmidt and Carrie Elkin from Austin, Texas, and Ma Crow and the Lady Slippers, Bluegrass from Cincinnati. So we'll have the smaller stage where people can just get out of the sun and go and enjoy some really quality acoustic music.
Sure.
And then they can return back after that's over because they're going to alternate to the main stage.
Tell me about the jam tent workshops.
Oh, the jam tent workshops are a lot of fun. The workshops, we have a singer-songwriters workshop that happens. So this year we're going to have Ronnie Arbo and Daisy Mayhem. I'm not sure if you may have heard of Ronnie Arbo. She used to be in a bluegrass band called Salamander Crossing. Great fiddle player. But this, she does a great children's show, and she has several children's CDs out. So again, kid-friendly, family-friendly. She's going to do a kids' show in the tent this year. And we're also going to have in the Folk Jammers tent on Friday night, because our Friday night headliner is Christine Balfa and Balfa Toujours, the Cajun band. Her dad was Dewey Balfa, who brought Cajun music out of the bayou and onto the world stage.
Yeah.
She's our Friday night headliner. So in that tent, we're going to have Cajun dance instruction.
Oh, fun.
2.5-hour sessions before she comes on, so people can go over to the tent between the bands and learn a few quick dance steps. So when the Cajun music starts, they're not just sitting in their chair.
Wishing
dancing,
they could know how to dance.
Wishing they knew how to dance like that. They can actually quickly learn a few simple steps and get up and really immerse themselves in the Cajun culture.
I noticed on your website when you have a what to pack, and dancing shoes is
dancing
on that list.
Dancing shoes and a sun hat and sunscreen. Yeah,
love
we're
it.
Also going to have, what else are we having? Oh, we're going to have a Cajun cooking demonstration. We have a Cajun theme going this year.
Mm-hmm.
And we won't be thematic every year, but this year it just seemed to fall into place. So we're going to have Chef Patrick Mold from Louisiana is going to be coming into town and working with Steve Thomas, one of our local chefs in Madison. And they're going to be teaching how to cook a couple of Cajun dishes. In the tent. And then people can also bring their instruments, because when the sessions aren't happening, between those, we have our group called the Folk Jammers, and they're resident Madisonians. And they set up in the tent, and it's just a jam session. You can bring a musical instrument and go and sit in the tent and sit in and play some tunes with other people and get to know some like-minded musicians and or maybe not like-minded musicians.
But you might learn something new, right?
You might learn something new and share something that you know.
And, you know, that's all of this music is quite apart from the lure of just being by the Ohio River, mm-hmm. as well as, you know, Madison. If there's anybody listening to this who's never been, it's one of the great small main streets left in the country,
yes.
just chock full of amazing homes, some of which are open for touring.
Mm-hmm.
The Lanier Mansion in particular, people might want to check
sure,
out. There's a
sure.
winery. There's,
there's
a lot
wineries.
Of antiquing.
Yes.
And so you're actually, I noticed on your website, you have a nice portal that people can go through to find places to stay if they want to make it a destination and
yes.
stay overnight.
Yeah.
Friday night, the music starts at 6. Saturday afternoon starts at 1.
Yes.
Yep.
Correct.
Great.
Correct. And wristbands, the pre-sale wristbands are on sale right now. You can go to our website, www.riverroots.org.
Mm-hmm.
And you can order the wristbands on this through the website. They're $25. And if you get them before May 1st, you get $10 in food tickets that you'll pick up at the will call at the gate to use in the festival for either beverages or food. So really, you're getting the festival. If you get your wristband before May 1st, you're getting
you're
the
getting
festival,
festival
for $15.
$15. Yeah, that, good incentive.
And you're talking Carolina Chocolate Drops.
Yep.
Ben Solee. John McCutcheon, one of the great songwriters, American songwriters. The Vespers, a new great up-and-coming band. Ronnie Arbo. As I mentioned, Christine Balfa. And from Louisville, we've got Apple Latin, which is a great mix of Appalachian music with Latin, Spanish music.
I can't picture it. I got to Google
that. Yeah, Google
and,
Apple Latin. They are amazing. And they're a really up-and-coming band in the Louisville market. And then we also have Andrea Davidson, who is a Madisonian, who is now transferred to Louisville. She's on tour with Robert Earl Keen right now. And she is doing very well. She just won an International Peace Award for one of her songs called The Natchez Trace and was over in Ireland to accept it. So she's an amazing songwriter. So you've got all this talent. The Frisbee Dog Show, food trucks and gourmet food, Cajun dance stepping. You've got all this stuff for $15 if you get your wristband before May 30th, May 1st.
I
so
love it.
You just go to riverroots.org and you can order the wristband. We are actually also doing on-site camping this year, so people can come
really?
And camp. You don't have to get a hotel.
Oh, nice.
You can order a campsite. You can register for camping through our website as well. And or you can go to visitmadison.org as well, and they have information there. But really, you can just do it all right through the River Roots website. We've just reconstructed the entire site, so it's very user-friendly and easy to navigate.
When you moved, when you and your family moved
yes.
from Indianapolis to Madison, you didn't really intend to be the impresario that you are now.
No, if you had told me that I would be doing all the things that I'm doing down there now, I would have probably said, oh, yeah, right. No, I moved there as we've talked about, my furniture restoration business
yeah.
and antique preservation, because Madison, as you mentioned, the Main Street, that is a National Historic Landmark District now
right.
since 2006. And so I thought, you know, I'd done some work down there, and my wife and I were starting a family. And so we wanted to raise our son in a small town environment. And we'd been performing in Madison at the winery and also at the festival
mm-hmm.
Since 2003. So we were going down every weekend. We loved it. We just loved the town. And finally, we decided to make the move. Make the commitment. And I thought I was just going to be doing my furniture business and playing some gigs at the winery and, you know, having some fun. But then John, unfortunately, passed away from a stroke. John, the coordinator who's position I took,
mm-hmm.
Passed away from a stroke in 2010, and the city, members of the city and other people in the community came to me and asked me if I would do this.
They needed you.
They needed me, and I had no idea. I had no idea. And if you'd told me what all it was going to take to do this, I might not have taken the job. But I'm in my third year now, and I've really got my legs under me, and I have a great staff of volunteers. I mean, I really have to give kudos to all the volunteers. I'm the only person that actually gets any stipend for doing this. Everyone else does it out of the love of the festival and the kindness of their heart. They're passionate about this festival, and it shows in the way that it comes off. So, yeah, it's really turned out beautifully, and I'm doing a lot of other things in Madison now. We run a house concert series, and I'm involved in a lot of historic preservation in the town. And so,
I might have to stop you soon, or people will be leaving Indianapolis to come to Madison. Stop it.
Yeah, stop. It's a great place to visit, and that's how it starts. You start visiting it, and then it kind of gets you
uh-huh.
and grabs hold of you.
Okay.
And next thing you know, you're buying a house for the weekend, and the next thing you know, you're retiring there, you're thinking about making a move. It's happened with several people. My friend Bill Langton, the jazz guitarist, Bill and Luann have a house down there now, and they still are here in Indianapolis.
Hey, but stop it, Madison. You've got this magnet that's attracting all our great musical talent.
At the same time, Madison really draws on Indianapolis, too, and we really like to have that symbiotic relationship with Indy, you know.
Sharon Gamble with Greg Ziesmer. Learn about the May 17th and 18th Madison River Roots Festival, including family fun, lodging, food, drink, and, of course, all the music at riverroots.org.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio. The inaugural Shining Light Film Festival, which has been created to shine a light on mental health awareness, will take place from May 2nd through the 4th, primarily at the Wheeler Arts Community Space in Fountain Square. Travis DiNicola spoke with festival organizers C.J. Soroki and Ray Mills about this new event.
C.J., Ray, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to have you both in our studio.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Absolutely. So we'll talk about what this new film festival includes in just a few minutes, but I want to start with how did this sort of come to be? I mean, it's kind of an interesting concept to have a film festival that's also promoting mental health awareness, and I have to say, for a first-year film festival, it seems like you guys have a lot of experience coming into this. But CJ, let's start with you. How did this sort of come to be?
It came to be, Jackie Pittman and I work with awareness of mental health through the performing arts, and I've been with that organization probably about 3-4 years now, and we had done a project last year to play to address stigma and around mental illness, and we had kind of done enough of that, and Jackie Pittman and I had a passion for film, mm-hmm. and we believed film would be a great media to show different aspects of mental illness as well as address stigma and show our mission is to raise awareness about mental health issues and show that recovery is possible. So,
and you've done this in the past, as you said, through theater mainly, through plays?
Through theater, we've done, this is our fourth or fifth project. We've done a couple projects with Spirit and Place. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then last year we had a grant to do the play Nobody Needs to Know, and we wound up doing, we train mental health consumers, people that had access to the mental health system, to do Reader's Theater with this play. It was it's a seven-character play, and we did 27 performances in period from October to end of May.
Right.
All over
Marion. Yeah, I remember it with a lot of different locations.
Marion and the surrounding counties. So we were quite busy with that, and Jackie was the artistic director, along with Nick DiPrato. So those two. And I actually acted in a few of the performances, and it was pretty fun.
So this year you thought, okay, well, we're going to put on a film festival, and this is where Ray got involved, right? How'd you get connected with all this?
Well, like I've known CJ just in a different context, and she knew that I had worked as the artistic director for the Heartland Film Festival, mm-hmm. and she called me out of the blue and said, you know, would you talk to us about, you know, doing something with film? And she didn't know at the time that I wasn't working for Heartland anymore. So we met, and it was actually really great because it was CJ and Jackie just sitting across from me, and they just started to talk, and the more they talked, and I could tell their passion. But also, it was kind of funny where they talked about maybe doing a few films on a Saturday, mm-hmm. you know. But I knew the grant that we were receiving from the state was for $50,000, and I just thought, wait a minute, you know, are you going to make those films that you're going to show, you know? And that's where I think I just sort of nudged them to think about it in a bigger way, because I'm kind of a big thinker anyway.
And now it's a 3-day festival. Plus, there's also been a number of other sort of preview events.
Yeah.
We did 6 preview films starting in November. Mm-hmm. Every second Friday, we've done a preview film. And we tried to pick from a variety of time periods and genres, and so we went all the way from The Three Faces of Eve, mm-hmm. To we showed War Torn this past Friday, That's an HBO documentary about PTSD. And so that was kind of, we wanted some events leading up. And I think what makes us unique as far as a film festival is we don't just show the film. We have a discussion after, guided discussion afterwards. We try to have somebody there that has experienced the mental illness or disorder or injury. And then we also have an expert in the field. And so, and there's audience participation in the discussion. So that makes it really neat because then it brings it home to people. It's not just something up there on the screen. And we learned that from our doing the play the year before.
Sure.
Was when we had the discussion afterwards, that's where the real learning and education and awareness came about.
I have to say, one of the most unusual elements that I've ever seen in a program for a film festival that's in yours is how with the title of each film and the date immediately after it lists what different mental illnesses this film addresses, yeah. Whether it's clinical depression or addiction, PTSD, obsessive compulsive disorder, bipolar, yeah. Schizophrenia. And it's really kind of fascinating to like, oh, yeah. Okay, so if, you know, maybe, you know, I want to learn more about depression or know someone who's dealing with that, you know, these are films that I might be directed to.
And one of the beauties of it, too, is even though those are really heavy things to talk about, you know, but this isn't a real heavy festival, too. There's definitely the seriousness of the illness in every single film, but it, you know, it comes at it from so many different angles, and there's so many amazing characters in all these different films. And, you know, we try to emphasize the hope of recovery, too. Mm-hmm. You know, no film gives a complete answer to,
sure.
You know, and then that's why during the festival, too, we're going to have discussions after each of the films with the, you know, all the different professionals. And we're also fortunate for the closing night film, As High as the Sky, the filmmaker and the lead actress are also going
excellent.
To come, and that's a film about OCD. But also, one of our sponsors, when we were meeting with them to talk about our needs, one of the guys there across the table immediately said to me, are you doing something on OCD? I'd be willing to speak on a panel. And
wow.
So it's so great that one of our sponsors, Markey's, actually, yeah. You know, that they that they're willing, you know, he's willing to come. And I think he's bringing his son, too, who's 15, who also is deals with that. So that's just it's
that's really terrific. I mean, I know you've, you know, and also, this is quite a mix of films. I mean, it's both fiction, some documentary, some shorts.
Yeah, there's well, the shorts. There's it's 7 features altogether and 12 shorts.
Okay.
And there's even we even have a music video in there. You know, and some things are more experimental than others. It's you know, and some are very straightforward. There's one short film. On panic attacks where there's dance involved in this really creative, unique way. And then we have a local film, too, which Passion to Opportunity, Drew Dietrich.
Okay.
He's a young man with autism from here who he went and got his master's degree, I think, in environmental science. And he's come back, and now he works at the zoo and for the voting board, I think. He has two jobs. And, you know, and it's just an exciting thing to see somebody who – is dealing with that, you know.
And this pretty much all takes place down at the Wheeler Arts Community Center down in Fountain Square, right?
Yes. We have found that as a great location because it's on bus lines. It's it's great parking. It's very easy to get to. There's a lot of places to eat around there because we didn't want to have to get into providing food for everybody in our first year. So there's lots of places to eat. So if you want to take a break and go eat somewhere. But one of the things that, you know, to go back to the discussion piece, even in the 6 pre-films, what the audience has taken away has just been mind-blowing as far as we showed Temple Grandin, which was about autism, and we had so many grandparents and parents there that it gave them an insight into their own child or their own grandchildren. Oh, this is why this doesn't work when I do this with them. Or, you know, this is what might be going through their head. And that's what gives me the passion to do this is, you know, that there is that learning that's taking place. There is that awareness that's raised.
You really are shining light on this. And I mean, it sounds like through the art of film, really being able to make talking about mental illness maybe a little bit easier, more accessible, certainly providing, you know, more awareness and education. But it's an interesting entry point, it seems like.
Because it's, you know, even if they don't necessarily participate in the discussion, they've seen the film, they've heard some personal experience afterwards, they've heard some local expertise, and I think you can't not walk away without some sort of impression of the illness that we're covering in a given film.
Sure, sure. So what was the response of filmmakers as you were approaching them? Ray, I mean, you've obviously worked with a lot of, you know, filmmakers who, you know, want to compete for the big award that Heartland offers. I mean, for something like this, how did filmmakers respond?
It was really cool because, I walked away from Heartland with a pretty big database of filmmakers who I had talked to over the years. And so I put it out to them, you know, and I just said, this is a new thing, we're doing this. But the cool thing was, is that they started talking to each other because, especially filmmakers who had made mental health themed films, they seem to all know each other because there's not very many festivals that do what we're doing. We think we're like the fifth or the sixth in the world to be specifically about mental health issues. We've done the research. There's some on disability, and that's where I found some of the films, but they're much broader than we are. But once I got a hold of one of them and said, would you submit your film, all of a sudden I started getting films from everywhere. And we didn't have a ton of submissions. I think it was a total of 40. But again, it was the quality of the submissions. You know, it was kind of hard to narrow things down, you know, and we, I think we walk away from this going, you know, well, we definitely have films we could even consider for next year maybe for other programs that we do.
Yeah. And to be international on our first year is pretty exciting. Yeah. We
six
have
countries, right?
six countries represented in these films. So to me, that just was mind-blowing that we actually managed to pull from so far away, as far away as Australia, New Zealand.
Yeah.
Wow.
And
now, is there any talk of offering some sort of prize at some point? Or?
We will have a Best of Fest.
Okay.
You know, if maybe down the line, if we could find a sponsor to do something, that'd be fun. You know, it'd be great.
But we're definitely doing a Best of Fest, and
we'll announce that. At the fest.
at the closing night.
Well, let me ask you this real quick before we wrap things up. People can get a package that allows them to see a whole bunch of these, or how does that work for ticketing and such?
It's, well, for one thing, every screening is free.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, but we are asking people to RSVP. They can go to our website, shininglightfilmfest.org, and that'll have the links. If they go to our scheduling and tickets page, they'll see all the films, and they can just click.
RSVP online, so you just know, and you know.
Well, and so that they get in, because we have a feeling that some of the films you won't be able to walk up.
Sure, especially if it's free. Okay.
Yeah, and we also have two seminars that we're doing too. One is on gun violence and mental health, and then the other one is just called Crazy About Film. It's just about the love of film, you know. And you know, so, but all of those are online, and it'd be great to see a whole bunch of people in your audience. RSVP, we'd love to see them come out.
That'd be great.
Yeah. There's going to be opportunities for people to donate, but we really want this to be accessible to people, and that's why we chose to do it how we're doing it.
Well, congratulations. I can't wait. Best of luck with your inaugural Shining Light Film Festival. CJ, Ray, thanks so much for coming into Art of the Matter.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Travis DiNicola spoke with the Shining Light Film Festival organizers C.J. Sirocki and Ray Mills. The festival takes place May 2nd through the 4th at the Wheeler Arts Community Space in Fountain Square. For more information, visit shininglightfilmfest.org. Again, shininglightfilmfest.org.
Sharon?
Yes, Travis.
Well, I was just thinking that these April showers we've been having, you know what they're supposed to bring?
Mayflowers?
Exactly. And Mayflowers.
Pinta's Santa Maria exploring ships. Mayflowers.
The Pinta. Oh, nice. Well done. Well, whatever these showers bring and whatever is blooming, I'm sure we'll talk about it on that calendar we call
What'll
We Do?
Well, yeah, what do you have that's popping up? Of you to read my mind, because I want to remind people that Orchard in Bloom is coming up. Yes, May 3rd through the 5th. There's a preview party May 2nd from 6 to 8:30, and that's kind of an elegant affair. But you can also go through the weekend, May 3rd through the 5th, at Holiday Park, and it is one of the most elegant garden shows around and gives you some ideas for things that you can actually recreate in your garden. Make sure you take a little bit of money, because there might be some plants or garden art that you just can't live without. Also food and beverage available as well. So, Orchard in Bloom, May 3rd through the 5th at Holiday Park, preview night May 2nd.
Cool. Hey, if you've been hearing a lot of people walking around speaking Italian, you know, Ciabella, it's probably because they've been going to the Italian Film Festival that IUPUI has been hosting. And it's actually, they've been shown at the IUPUI Campus Theater and also the Indianapolis Public Library, Central Library. And it's been going on actually for a couple weeks, but it continues on, including this weekend and then through May 18th. This weekend on Saturday the 27th, these are all Italian films and they're free, by the way. I'm just going to read what the English titles are, not to try to do the Italian names here, but Escort in Love, which sounds very Italian, is at 3 p.m., and The Immature, The Trip, at 6 p.m. this Saturday, and then on Saturday, May 18th, at the Central Library. The ones this weekend are at the Campus Center. Then on the 18th at the Central Library, Torment at 12:30, and It Was the Sun at 3 p.m. It's all part of the Italian Film Festival, and you can check out information both at the library and IUPUI for more information.
Wowie zowie. Good stuff. Hey, don't forget, how could you not know that this is the big weekend for the Stutz Artists Open House?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. And that's going on this Friday night. If you're hearing us Saturday morning, I hope you had a wonderful time. If you went last night, you might not be up to hear us Saturday morning. But it also continues on Saturday afternoon, and that's a little bit quieter time where you can go back.
Family time.
Go back and look at that piece of art you're attracted to one more time, and just check it out. You can find out more at stutzartists.org.
This is a fun show title. The Unnecessary Black and White. It's a mobile gallery show. It's taking place on First Friday, Friday, May 3rd, one night only, down outside the Murphy Building. And it started out as a challenge from Heron Professor Flounder Lee to his photography class, asking his students, all who had yet to be featured in a gallery, to come together as a class and create a gallery show to display their final projects in public, and all in black and white. And they've come up with doing it sort of like a food truck of art, if you will. And it's taking place. The Unnecessary Black and White Show is going to be shown on a 26-foot moving truck outside the Murphy Building on First Friday. Should be a lot of fun.
Excellent. Hey, your old stomping grounds from when Young Audiences was next to the Children's Museum in the Schnall Raw House.
Yes.
That house is open as the 2013 St. Margaret's Guild Hospital. Let me try that again. It's such a mouthful. St. Margaret's Hospital Guild's Decorators Show House. And
it's
yes, there are lots of possessives in there. It's gorgeous. It's at 3050 North Meridian Street on the west side of the street, just north of the Children's Museum. And interior designers and landscapers have been at work since February, restoring and renovating the house. And it is just a spectacular example of great architecture, and I can't wait to see how it's been decorated. You can get more information at showhouseindy.org, and of course it goes to a good cause benefiting Wishard Eskenazi Health Services.
Very cool.
Oh, that goes through May 12th, by the way, closed on Mondays.
Excellent. Good to know. Hey, the spring concert for the Ballet Theater of Carmel is coming up, and they are doing Phoenix Feather, which is, Sharon, what do you think it is? It's an adaptation of
the story of the mythical bird,
the
that
firebird,
burns and
yes,
reinvents itself. Uh-huh.
So they're doing sort of an excerpt of that, an adaptation of that, which is a very very cool thing. So, of course, the Stravinsky's famous Russian ballet. And so they are doing their version, The Phoenix Feather. And again, this is through the Ballet Theater of Carmel, and it's coming up on May 11th at the Westfield High School Auditorium. And that show will be at 7 p.m. So it should be a lot of fun. Definitely worth checking out.
Speaking of things that trace their origins back to that bird that burned and reinvented itself, the Phoenix Theater is in the middle of a segue alert is in the middle of a production run right now of the Pulitzer Prize winner Cliburn Park by Bruce Norris. Act 1 set in 1959, Act 2 set in 2009. It's a play about lots of things, including prejudice, real estate, and race relations, and it's really fascinating. So check that out. Runs through May 5th on the Russell stage at the Phoenix Theater.
Cool. Hey, Broadway star of Billy Elliot, Sideshow and Jekyll and Hyde, that would be the Broadway vixen Emily Skinner, is going to be performing some of her favorite and a few arcane classic Broadway songs as part of her Broadway Her Way show, which is taking place at Cabaret at the Columbia Club May 3rd and 4th, both shows at 8 p.m. You can do it with food and beverage and all sorts of fun. A very swanky night with Emily Skinner.
Ooh, love that. Hey, it's springtime in Broad Ripple. That means flowers, lots of outdoor dining options, and the Broad Ripple Spring Gallery Tour. This spring, no fewer than 22, count them, two locations will open their doors to the public with free art exhibits, food, and entertainment. That's coming up on May 10th from 5 to 9 p.m. You can get more information and a map of what's open and what you should do that night at brva.org. You can also pick up maps at participating locations, but how would you know what they are until you get the map?
There you go.
See how that works?
<That's tricky. laughs>
BRVA stands for Broad Ripple Village Association. BRVA.org. Click there and get a map.
Sharon, that's all the time we've got. So we will be back next week to see what else is blooming on that calendar we call.
What do we do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
Footlight Musicals is tackling a show that made all of the actors of a certain age sit up and take notice, Stephen Sondheim's Follies. Sharon Gamble invited director Bill Hale in to tell us how he cast the show and what some of its challenges and joys are.
Help us know where in Sondheim's career Follies fits.
It was written in 1971. It follows a company in the chronological order of shows.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, he was still continuing a collaboration with Harold Prince, who was his producer and also director. It was the first time that Michael Bennett, who also choreographed a company, he ventured out to not only choreograph Follies, but he also was the co-director.
Mm-hmm.
With Hal Prince.
So it has... I mean, there's musical theater and then there's Sondheim. It's mm-hmm. it's like they're two completely different categories.
Right.
And every Sondheim show seems to have a certain melancholic underside to it.
Mm-hmm.
But it feels that like that might be a little stronger in Follies.
Oh,
it feels like a show somebody wrote late in his career or at least somebody who knew artists who were late in their careers and could therefore interpret them.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's interesting is I think Prince and Sondheim were both like in their mid-40s when they wrote.
So not that old.
Yeah, but I've always been interested in the show ever since it, opened. Unfortunately, I never got to see it, in the original production. And I've seen, bootleg copies that are out there of home movies that were shot of the rehearsal period.
Sure.
But, the longer time has gone on and finally getting a chance to do it, I think I'm the right age to do it because I certainly wouldn't have had the perspective in my mid-40s as I do now, which I just turned 61. So I just, you know.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I just feel blessed because we were planning on doing this 5 years ago and we just couldn't get a cast together because it's such a scary piece of theater. I mean, from a challenge standpoint. And it also calls for people of a certain age in major roles. And a lot of people don't like to admit they're, you know, they're in their 40s. And I shouldn't say this, but I will, that especially women are of a certain age. They don't want to get typecast in being of a certain age. So they might play younger. And if they would accept something in Follies, you know, you're saying, okay, I'm at this point in my life, you know.
Well, it is interesting to look at actors' resumes, in particular, actresses' resumes, and very seldom do they put their actual age. They say plays 30 to 45 or plays 50 to 65 or whatever, a range that people have a comfort level with saying that they could portray, that they can find the emotional center of a person in this age range.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm good friends with one actress who absolutely refuses to put her age on a audition form.
Mm-hmm.
And I bugged her about it one time, and jokingly, and she cornered me and said, "I'm going to tell you once and for all what my age is." Unfortunately, I don't. In terms of that kind of thing, I don't have a good memory, so I don't remember.
She's probably delighted by that,
and
we're not naming her here.
But you know, we certainly did ask. On the resume or on the applications that we had on the audition forms, what everybody's age was. But we've got some people that are playing younger than what they're actually playing on
stage.
So,
well, there's the finding actors who are willing to say, yes, I'll commit to being this age on stage. There's also the very real factor of not everybody's voice remains as flexible as it once was, and mm-hmm. Sondheim is perilously hard.
It is terribly hard. I'm very blessed with all of the actors and actresses I have. The two ladies that I have in my leads, Karen Fry and Laura Duvall Whitson, both still maintain their vocal chops, and especially Laura. Laura probably has the most difficult song in the entire production, which is Losing My Mind.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
In rehearsals, I mean, she's already there.
Wow, you know, that's great.
On that song. So.
Yeah, and we're having this conversation the first week of April, so that's terrific. So the plot centers around a reunion. It takes place in a crumbling theater, a little metaphor there. The theater is scheduled for demolition. So tell us a little bit more about the heart of the story.
Okay. Well, like you said, it's this theater is being demolished, and an impresario, sort of like Florence Ziegfeld, Dimitri Wiseman, is calling back all of the performers that performed at his theater between the Great Wars, as he says, for a first and last reunion.
Mm.
And so all of these showgirls from 1918 through 1941 come back, and essentially to have this party. And during a portion of the evening, you get to see performers perform the numbers that they did in the Follies. But the gist of the evening centers on two couples who met in the at the Follies. The two women were showgirls in 1941, and they met their husbands there. And they've come back to sort of confront the past.
Mm-hmm.
One couple is highly successful, and the other couple... He's a salesman, and his wife has always pined for the male
yeah.
in the other relationship. Yeah. And so they have this midlife crisis, which in the last 20 minutes of the show, you get to see a Follies like you would see a Ziegfeld Follies with all of the sets and beautiful costumes and everything.
Why did they call it Follies back in the Ziegfeld days?
You know, I have not a clue.
Just because it's frivolous
and silly?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, sort of for somebody who's more familiar with Busby Berkeley musicals, there's just costumes and sets that are so extravagant because they can be.
Right.
You know, let's put on a beautiful show and dress these characters up.
And that's one of the reasons why this show is not done that often, especially on a community theater basis, because it's really expensive to do. We did it back in 1977, and it hasn't been done locally since.
You're kidding. My Lord. So there's a couple generations that haven't seen Follies live locally.
Right. As a matter of fact, our musical director, Paula Phelan, was one of the showgirls in the show. And then Lisa McGuire, who was also a showgirl, was a young showgirl in the first production, is reappearing in this production as one of the older showgirls.
Oh, that's so cool. What great continuity and interesting life experience to bring to the character. Are you building all the costumes? Are you borrowing some? What are you doing about that?
All of them are being built.
Whoa.
Stephen Hollenbeck, who is pretty well known in Indianapolis for his costumes. This is his, he says, is his last community theater production.
Really?
Yeah. Stephen's so very talented that he does this for a living, and he's so busy doing professional productions that this was the one that he really wanted to do, and he thought this was a good one to bow out on.
Oh, it's so perfect.
Yeah. And what he's designed so far, we did a photo shoot about a week and a half ago over at IRT with six ladies who are ghosts of past Wiseman showgirls. And his costumes for those are just stunning.
Mm.
I haven't seen the ones for the Loveland sequence, which closes the show, but I know they'll be equally as stunning, and I've seen costumes that he already has throughout the rest of the evening, so it'll be something for the eye.
What a treat.
Yeah.
And definitely need help back in the changing room for getting in and out of those costumes.
Well, I might say we do know that the showgirl costumes for the Loveland sequence are so big. The last time we had to do the show, they cleared our shop area, which is off at stage left. Yeah. And they dropped the dresses on top of the girls because they couldn't put them on down in the dressing room and bring
them
up. As a matter of fact, we had to clear up something staging-wise last night so that all of the women will be coming from stage left. And when, once again, all of their costumes will be out in the shop area, and they'll put them on there and then glide out on stage.
Love that. The audience doesn't need to know that, but it just adds to the intrigue of how a show gets put on. Choreography. Let's talk about choreography, because how do you make that compromise between the girls, in particular, the showgirls, especially the ones who were in the Follies the first year was 1918, right?
Right.
Reprising their numbers, but with bodies that maybe aren't quite as flexible as they were back in the day.
Well, we have a group of, what they like to affectionately refer to themselves as the older broads, a lot of them are performers who have been in Indianapolis theater for many, many years, and they have dancing abilities of varying degrees. Some are real tappers. We've got two or three real tappers in there, and we have one or two ladies who don't know tap all that well.
Mm-hmm.
They have a big number called Who's That Woman, which is also subtitled Mirror, Mirror. And basically, the audience gets to see the older gals perform this number, and all of a sudden, in the middle of the number, their younger counterparts from what they were like earlier come out and mirror them. And that number is a number to behold. It really is. I'm very blessed to have a wonderful choreographer in Linda Reese. She's choreographed a lot of shows around town, and she's choreographed for me before, but this one is, you know.
Might be the height.
Yeah.
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 How do you, now you've directed other Sondheim shows.
Right.
Is there something in particular you do to prepare for a Sondheim show that's different from anything else, or is it just, it's the craft, no matter who wrote the show, what it's like?
I'd say over. I've done other shows that other people have written, but the Sondheim shows I do a lot of research on any show I'm doing, but it's especially the Sondheim stuff. I mean, I've got scrapbooks galore of Sondheim articles. I subscribe to the Sondheim Review magazine, and especially on this show, I've been collecting material since day one. And so I refer to that. I've also referred to an excellent book that it was written about, I want to say 5 or 6 years ago, by the gentleman who is chairman of the Rodgers and Hammerstein Organization, Ted Chapin. He wrote a book called Everything Was Beautiful, which is about the making of the original production. He was a college student at the time, and he served as a gopher. And he did this for college credit, so he kept a journal. And then, like I said, 5 or 6 years ago, he decided to write a book about the experience.
What a great perspective he
had. Oh, yeah. And it's been a wonderful source of information.
Did anything surprise you?
Oh, yeah. Well, that everything was really – most productions, when you put them together, they can get off course and they can get chaotic.
Mm-hmm.
And the challenge they faced was that they had a lot of performers who were in their 50s, 60s, 70s,
mm-hmm.
and they weren't – especially Michael Bennett wasn't prepared for that.
Mm-hmm.
On paper, it looked good, but he found that some of the performers couldn't do exactly what he thought they'd be able to do.
Sure, sure. Well, happily, it sounds like you don't have that challenge.
No, no.
Sharon Gamble with director Bill Hale. See Sondheim's Follies at Footlight May 3rd through the 19th, and you can learn more at footlight.org. That's footlite.org. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Vaselli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m. I'll talk with Jeff Mays about his new career as a booking agent.
I'll get a preview of the Actors Theater of Indiana's musical review of Sinatra.
And we'll find out how the Cultural Trail will be celebrating its official opening. Plus, we'll have our arts calendar of events we call
What'll We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.